Thanks, Tzvi, for giving me this possibility first. And yes, I make a very little introductory part. So first I make some introductory comment. Then I make comment on comparison of diagrammatic and unitary method. Then I discuss standard stuff, the OPP reduction, the von Neerven-Vermaseren basis, parametrization, of the loop integrand, and the d-dimensional treatment, and finally a few comments on calculation with massive particles. Then I briefly make a comment on the CPU time scaling, and then I also show that how the OPP can be combined with analytic consideration, right? So then when we do the unitary method, since we should project coefficients, you do it not analytically differently than in numerically, because certain analytic technique doing an infinite limit or doing a contour integral on the computer is more difficult, so therefore you should proceed differently. So these NLO calculations for Tevatron and LHC are very important. It's demonstrated many times that if you do a next living order corrections, then you get a better description, you get smaller scale dependence. We've seen a million times all these curves. The beautiful thing, if you go to high multiplicities, still it's working. So again, you find the same improvement, much better understanding. All the arguments why you should do NLO for a Hadron Collider calculation is there. So no question, we should be engaged on this calculation. So it's interesting that in 2004, when we had here a workshop, we had a certain projection what we can do in the future, and today I can say that we do much better. So that's a great progress, and this, I believe, is mainly as a result of this twistor unitarity method and all these things. Even the diagrammatic technology was very strongly motivated to improve their own approach because the pressure they got from the unitary side. So therefore I write it that was the progress, right? 85. Yes, I just put random numbers here a bit as far as the years are concerned, but it's approximately. So that was something like first attempt, and then we had the Kayet, our workshop here, and then that what happened. And towards full automation, we are almost there, but not quite yet. So why, so where is not, we had a bottleneck, right? That NLO, we have real contribution, and we have loop contribution. Usually the infrared singularities are cancelled analytically, right? And we didn't know how to do that efficiently, and now what we can say that the computer time for these two calculations for high multiplicity processes are comparable. And although still the loop calculations a little bit slower than the subtracted real contributions, but since the phase space integral is much harder for the real subtracted real contribution, you need more phase space point here than here, so then the integrated computer time about the same. So actually, so the bottleneck is completely removed. So the real contribution is a separate technical development, and there was also important. So we do subtractions. The subtraction is done with the Catani-Seymour method, or the so-called FKS subtraction method, and both are automated. So that was the Sherpa code, and that is the MED FKS are automated. And so the real part are separately can be calculated. We don't really talk here about the unitary method. The unitary method is focusing in the loop corrections, right? So all this development has great phenomenological importance, right? And also I must say that here, the 2 to 5, we have only one calculation, right? The W plus 4 jet, and that is the black hat. Historically, I also should say that what are the real steps, to my opinion, that made the progress. So, of course, we had the visionary paper of Dan Dixon and Kosover in 1994. Yeah.
Dunbar
also. The key. Where they suggested that go back to the look at the cuts of the imaginary parts and construct the amplitude. And what was very hard in pure S-matrix theory became much easier because we have perturbation theory, and we have a lot of properties in perturbation theory which is not generally true in S-matrix theory. So a lot of information. And that was in the 2004 time when our workshop we had here at KITP, and that was the CSW, the BCFW, and the BCF papers, right? That was the generalized unitarity paper, that was the recursion relation, and that was the two different recursion relations. That was an outcome of our workshop in 2004 here. Great success. And then came in 2007 the OPP reduction, which is a new way to doing tensor integral reduction, which then very well fits with the unitarity method. And then was also progress how to do it efficiently in numerical applications, and that it was my paper with Kiselis and Walter Gile, and also Kirill Melnikov. Then, based on these theoretical results, a lot of numerical implementation happened, and there are various names. So I already mentioned Black Hat, and of course, it would be nice to call list all the people who are contributing, but I will not do it here, right? Because we have a blackboard talk. So that was my first chapter, already finished. The second is that how you, a little bit the spirit, right? How you do this calculation for LHC in old way and the new way, right? So we should do the old way because checking papers is usually we do us in the old way, so there is some better chalk. Here is a bigger one, right? So the old way is that usually people start with the Feynman diagram generators, right? And that are two things, right? Q graph. I think all of you knows this thing, right? And Feynman's. Then the output of these codes are just very symbolic, just a list of how you topologically connect. If you have certain vertices, yeah, you specify the vertices and the particles. You make a topological list of possible connection of graphs with some control. And then people usually get some output, which can be put into symbolic manipulation program like Form, Mathematica, or Maple. And then you really specify now explicitly the vertices, the propagators, and then you produce there's a list of all diagrams, right? And then you manipulate this list of all diagrams and generate a Fortran code or C++ code, whatever you like, which calculates color factors times kinematical factors, right? For every diagram. And then you need something with the reduction, the tensor integral. And here people use now Passanov-Beltmann or OPP, because OPP is a more efficient reduction method. And then sum over all diagrams, and you get the amplitude, right? So you see, the OPP can be applied diagram by diagram. The new method, we talk about, of course, here also can decompose in colors. You can do it in either colorless amplitudes or color amplitudes. So you have color decomposition, color ordered amplitudes. Start with that. But it's not enough, right? Because actually we talk about primitive amplitudes. And we also have parent diagrams. So in the pure gong case, the color ordering and the primitive amplitude is the same. If you have quarks involved, you have a quark line or more than one quark line, you can order the gluons with respect to the quarks also. And if you want to have cuts, you would know exactly what are your propagators. So therefore, better to start with fully ordered diagrams, including the quarks. So primitive amplitudes also was introduced first in the literature, BDK, 94 or 93, the later, right? So interesting thing that parent diagrams are the diagrams with the maximal number of propagators. So if you have an amplitude with n particles, then the maximum number of propagators are n, right? If they are fully ordered. So therefore, if you have a parent diagram, then you know exactly your propagators, then you can discuss the cuts, right? So therefore, the next thing what you should discuss and understand, how you produce all possible cuts of your amplitudes, right? And that gives you the full listing at how many cuts and how you can do cuts. Of course, if you have n particles, then the question is that how many simultaneous cuts can you have? And then it comes the reduction, right? The OPP reduction tells you that you can have, depending whether you have in D dimension or you have in four dimension, you can have pentacuts, box cuts, so simultaneously five poles, four poles, three poles, two poles, one poles, dot poles. And then it means that, for example, for the gluon, if you have n particles, you have n over five binomial coefficient possible choice of cuts, right? And you can have that many pentacuts, right? If you have a quadrupole cut for the gluons, that is n over four. If you have, of course, coarse involved, that's a little bit modified. And then you do the OPP, and you, in the OPP, you just calculate the coefficient of the decomposition of the integrand, and then you calculate this coefficient, and then you construct the amplitude. But I cannot go into more detail here because I'm actually describing now the OPP, right? So that is my next topic. So just to have a feeling, right, that it's really pretty differently organized the calculation, right? I never told you about Feynman diagram, right? I talked about amplitudes, integrand, then I have a certain parametrization of the integrand. I talk about ordering particles. I talk about all possible cuts, and I calculate three amplitudes. I construct from three amplitudes the coefficients, and I get my answer. So it's completely different than doing the calculation. So the OPP. See, the OPP is valid for also a single Feynman diagram, the Ursula Papadopoulos Pitole. So I start with the integrand of a Feynman diagram, right, with n particles, L. And then I say that, okay, I have some denominator, which is P1, Pn, L, and then I have D1, D2, Dr, right? So it is a symbolically just is a one can write something like, right? I get here a flow, right, in the diagram. And of course, the momentum flow can come with several particles, if, yeah? So if I only have R, 1 to capital R, number of propagators in this diagram, and there are more particles, external legs, of course, then I have such a generic diagram, and I can have, here I get D1, D2, D3, and Dr, right? And then Di, L, is equal L plus Qi square minus Mi square, is totally standard thing, and then the inflow momentum is Ki, Qi minus Qi minus 1, and Ki is just some set of the, depending how, what sort of ordering I have chosen, and set of the, these external particles, right? And that can be 1 or 0. So I get R minus 1 inflow momentum, right? Momenta. And that's an interesting observation because it means somehow that it's the parametrization of the structure of all these simple rational function is has a certain physical information for the inflow momentum, and otherwise it is just a totally arbitrary loop momentum parameter in the and we are interested the properties of this function as a function of L, right? So now the it can happen that R minus 1 is less than D or equal D. So first I give an example. So take D equal 2 and R equals 3, right? It means that I get, let's say, D1 equal L plus Q1 squared minus M1 squared, D2 L plus Q2 squared minus M2 squared, and D3 equal S squared minus M3 squared, right? And it means that I have two inflow momentum, right? So since I'm in two dimension, the loop momentum can be expanded in some basis, right? And if I want to do reduction, it would be very nice if I could expand the loop momentum in sort of coefficient, which is just cancel denominator factors, because then I have the tensor integrals, I can cancel the denominator factors, right? So therefore, but, so it would be nice to find, then you say, okay, how should I do that? Q1 and Q2 are giving you some, give you some frame, right? But they are not orthogonal, obviously. So it's nice to use non-orthogonal frame. And it's very simple, so we know that any, in two dimension, there is no totally rank anti-symmetric tensor, so therefore we have this following identity. I'm really not, maybe too pedagogical for you, but I apologize if you find it boring. That is called Schouten identity. Of course, you know how to generalize it to any dimension, right? So then you just have more indices and you just move the lambda differently. And the interesting thing that if I can write it differently, this, like lambda epsilon, I can multiply with Q1 and Q2, trace it with Q1 and Q2, right? Then I get LQ1 epsilon lambda Q2 plus LQ2 epsilon Q1 lambda, right? So that gives me an expansion, LQ1 epsilon lambda Q2 over epsilon Q1 Q2 plus LQ2 epsilon Q1 lambda epsilon Q1 Q2, right? That's very nice. So I call these dual vectors, right? V1 lambda, I call these V2 lambda. And it's clearly that Qi Vj is equal to delta Ij, right? So it's a well-known thing from linear algebra. If I don't use a orthogonal system, then I should, if I have a non-orthogonal frame, Q1, Q2, I should define a dual frame, V1, V2, which is exactly this property. And then I get this nice property that lambda in the dual basis has coordinates, which is the standard form of the coordinates, right? Although I have non-orthogonal system, my coordinates are the standard projection to the original frame. And that's clearly, I can do that for any dimension, right? So if I did it for two dimensions, if I go to D equal 4 and R equal 5, I get very similar relations, right? So I can go with that with any dimension. But as a matter of fact, it's more interesting when I get, let's say, D equal 4 and R equals 3, right? Because if I have, for example, a bubble diagram, I have only two inflow momentum, then I should embed these dual vectors into a larger dimension space. And epsilons are not good for that. But that was the observation, yeah, by Fermat and von Mervin that we can easily do the embedding, just multiplying the numerator and the denominator with the same coefficient epsilon q1, q2. And you have two epsilons, of course, then you get Kronecker deltas, and Kronecker deltas can have arbitrary lambda, right? So the index lambda can go for, can live in any dimension. Nevertheless, this two-dimensional space is embedded in a larger space, right? So therefore, I get then Vi equals, just do it in two dimension first, right? Delta lambda Q2, Q1, Q2, delta 2, V1, and V2 equal delta Q1 lambda delta 2, that is the Gram determinant, and that is also a determinant. You understand this notation, right? I take all possible products and the correct sign, right? So delta lambda Q2 Q1 Q2 is just epsilon lambda Q2 epsilon Q1 Q2, right? And you know how to change it to Kronecker deltas and just get a sort of Gram determinant type of structure. So clearly, if I have no D dimension, right, any dimension, I can just have, let's say, in four dimension, I can have delta lambda Q, or three dimension, four dimension, yeah, Q1, Q2, Q3, right, Q1, Q2, Q3 over delta, Q4, right, delta 4, right? And then I get V2, V3, and V4. And that is the Fermat-Zeren von Mervin basis, right? So it is a nice thing, totally trivial, that using Schouten identity, the Schouten identity gives you a dual basis for a non-orthogonal coordinate system. And if you do the parametrization of the loop momentum in this dual basis, then the coordinates will be L dot QI, but L dot QI is equal to 1 half DI minus D0 minus QI squared plus MI squared minus M0 squared, right? So I achieved what I wanted, yeah? Because, well, if you have a L mu, right? It parameterized like some order DI, right? Plus some constant vector, right? Because these constants multiply the V, and the V is completely constructed from the external momentum, the inflow momentum. So it gives me immediately a reduction at the integrand level. So I didn't do any integral yet, right? So it's very nice. So therefore, if I, for example, if I have no L mu, I can write L P mu plus L P mu. L P mu is that part of the loop momentum which is defined by the dual basis. But if the inflow, the dimension of the inflow momentum is less than 4, right? So I'm not, I should use embedding, then I have seen additional coordinates. Right? If I only have two inflow momentum, because if I have a triple cut, a triangle diagram, or I have a box diagram, I have three inflow momentum, right? My loop momentum is four-dimensional or five-dimensional, then I have, that is defined in terms of the VIs, right? And that is defined in the rest, which is living in something which has nothing to do with physics, right? So if I do a tensor integral, there is nothing to carry these labels. This can be Jimmy Mu or sort of Lorentz indices, right? There is no dynamics in that. So therefore, we call this physical space for the inflow momentum. That is a transverse space, or even you can say trivial space, because there is no nothing happens with these indices. So therefore, if I have a L mu 1, L mu 2 over D0, 1, D2, D3, for example, for such a integrand, I write, in this case, it's a quadrupole term, so L mu, I get an L physical space plus plus a one-dimensional, call it just a unit vector, right? 4, L, and 4, right? And then the physical, that coordinate has some V constants vector, yeah? Plus something which is proportional to the denominator factors, right? So if it's a constant, then I reduce by rank 1, the tensor integral. If it is a DI, I reduce with 1, the scalar factor, right? And also the rank. So therefore, that is iteratively I can apply, and we get the OPP formula, right? Without doing anything, right? So I just do that. I make one iteration, and I got it, right? So therefore, doing this manipulation, I can prove that any integrand in this form, right, can be always written in a form that I n p1 pn l equals sum over, right, I1, I2, I3, I4, d tilde I, L, I will, so d0, I'm sorry, d I1, d I2, d I3, d I4, plus similar terms where you have only three indices, right, plus similar terms where you have two indices, then you have similar terms where you have one indices, right? You cannot have a constant term because if you are in Feynman gauge, the rank of the tensor integral is always equal with the number of the denominator factors. You cannot have more L in the numerator than denominator factors in the denominator. So if I have a rank 4 tensor integral, still I can write it in this way, and you see that the numerator only can depend on the transverse component of the parametrization, right? Not only that, it must also be traceless. So it is still I have a tensor structure, tensor integral, but that must be traceless and only depends on the transverse component of the loop momentum. Traceless is a big constraint, right? Because for example, if I have four dimension, right, then I have only one component. Traceless means that I cannot take a square. So it means that the mass general form in four dimension of this numerator function can only be di tilde L perb equal d0 tilde, just is I1, I2, I3, I4, right? I will drop it. So plus d1 tilde n4l, right? That is the transverse component. Because if it is squared, it must be traceless, right? A traceless, you know, l squared is equal lp squared plus lt squared, right? And that is a d0. That is reused. So lt is also reused. Lt squared is also reused, right? So whenever I get lt squared, it is reused. So therefore, and that is the information that the numerator function, so if I have here the C, C I1, I2, I3, L perb, and here I get D I1, D I2, D I3, and here I get the B I1, I2, L perb, and D I1, D I2, and here I get the A I, right, D I, L perb, then the always traceless tensors of the corresponding transverse component, right? But of course, as I go from box to triangle or bubble, the physical space is reduced and the transverse space is increased, right? So therefore, I must have I always talk about a fixed cut. So you also realize, right, that every cut, every denominator, the different choice of the denominator factors, a different choice of the inflow momenta, then I have a different choice of dual vectors. So for every cut, I have different dual vector, right? Every cut, I have a different expansion of the loop loop momentum. So I have an index that I make a quadrupole parametrization. I drop the specifying which the loop momentum flow I'm considering. I drop this information, and then I get sum over I equal 1, 2, 3, L, Q, I, V, I, mu, plus N, 4, L, N, 4, mu, right? And I get a triple parametrization. I get I equal 1, 2, L, Q, I, V, I, mu, plus N, 3, L, N3 mu plus N4 L N4 mu. And finally, yeah, you see how you should I continue, right? I don't want to write them out. So important, right, that this is very different from this one, right? Because it's a V dual vector, then I have only two inflow momentum, is a dual vector. I have three V's here, then I have only two V's here. So it's, but I have the recipe how to construct them, right? So therefore, I have all this parametrization, and that is the physical space component, that is the transit space component, right? And that's it. So now the question is that if I have such a trivial property, right? Yeah, I was still, one information which I didn't give you, which is everybody knows, of course, in the audience, that in four dimension, a pentagon scalar integral can be reduced in linear combination of boxes. It's a trivial to prove it using these formulas. So I will not do it because of time, but just a totally trivial application of these formulas you see immediately. And of course it depends on the dimension. If you have a five dimension, then there's so nice. If you have in three dimension, right, a triple integral can be reduced also the linear combination of bubbles. So therefore, how it goes? If I have many, many these, right, I start to reuse the tensors, I get less and less. And also, if I only have a scalar pentagon, I still can't reuse into boxes, right? So that's why I get these very generic things. So if the scalar pentagon is still a box, right? And if it is a tensor, so that's why, you see the interesting thing is OPP reduction in this way, you got almost free, right? And it's not so trivial to show that you have this general decomposition, but it didn't make an integral, right? And why I could do that? Because I have a very definite set of denominator factors, right? So if I have a primitive amplitude, I know all my propagators for my given process, and I consider a certain choice for and that is labeled with this I1, I2, I3 indices, and then I have this generic parametrization. And now I also know that that's a trivial function, right? Because I already seen that in the DIC is I only have two parameters, right? Because if they rank one tensor in the transverse momentum. So if I have a triangle, it is a rank three tensor, right? So the question is how many ways I can write down a traceless rank three tensor in the transverse momentum. And that's the parametrization, right? And it turns out that you can do it in seven or eight ways on some surface.
You don't do this for a specific diagram, but you do.
You can do that for. It didn't. You know, if you have an amplitude, that's a very. Thanks for the. So if you have an amplitude, right? You can sum up all Feynman diagrams, right?
But I thought you don't want to do that.
No, I can. I said, at first I just do that, right? To understand that I have well defined ordering, I know what I'm talking about. But I can also do that, right? I get an N, and a lot of denominator factor, right?
You can draw a picture of what the fence looks like, and how you group the diagrams into amplitudes.
Yeah, actually, here you already seen it, right? That every diagram can be reused, right? Like that. Then the sum of the diagram can be reused. You agree?
Sure, but you have to know what the sum of the diagrams is.
No, but you should know how many different ways you can have a propagator, right? So how many different ways you can have inflow momentum into your graph, right?
In the new method, you said you don't generate
fine diagrams. Right.
You don't need
Q-graph. Wait, right? So now we know. Wait a minute, right? So it's coming to the next step. Anyhow, so it doesn't matter whether you have Feynman diagrams, a single one, or you have a sum of 10 to the 23 Feynman diagrams, you get the same form, right? The only difference is that since you have 10 to the 23 Feynman diagram, you get n over 4 possible choice of the indices, right? No, I'm sorry. Oh, you know, I was wrong. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter.
You draw them like a triple cut picture and then tell them what diagrams are being summed to amplitudes. I think that might
just wonder where you get these.
You want to see the amplitudes. And draw the cuts.
But I think that Martin is worried that I have a 10 gluon amplitude where I have a 10 possible, right?
I think you want to see the term amplitude.
Look, if you have an ordered amplitude, right? If you have an ordered amplitude, the maximum.
Well, you have to know whether it's from that, whether it's scalar electric and
right. Just wait, right? So the point is now that the sum of the Feynman diagram have the same form. You agree with that? Right? Okay.
Can I just stand up for 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
So these points are on shell. So right here there's an amplitude, a tree amplitude that's fed into the formula. So that's what it
is. I want to explain it later, right? Maybe not very pedagogical I'm doing, but...
Or so anyway, but wherever you get trees from.
So the first thing is that you realize that what I'm doing is totally generic. I can do it any dimension. I can whether I do it in two-dimensional field theory, I will do it in 10-dimensional field theory. It's no difference. The only difference is that the numbers, these dimensions I separate, the inflows are different. So if I want to go to, let's say, 5-dimensional, 6-dimensional, then I have more components, right? So it means that if I go, I have a 4-dimensional parametrization loop momentum, and I now go to a 5-dimensional parametrization loop momentum, or 6-dimensional, the only difference is that I can have additional component for the transverse space for the same sort of inflow momentum, right? The inflow momentum is the same. If I do dimensional regularization, only the internal x are the dimensional, the external x are all 4. I should make a special choice, right? That the external particles are living in a 4-dimensional space, and the internal in the dimension. Then I should use for the internal parametrization the loop momentum a d-dimensional parametrization, right? But since the external legs are 4-dimensional or lower dimension, right? The LQI can only have 4 components. All the others, right? The extra dimension can be rotated in one direction. So effectively, in one loop, I only have 1 extra dimension. In 2 loop, I have 2 extra dimensions, 6. Yeah, so, and so on and so on. So therefore, if I want to make now that d-dimensional formalism, the only difference is that when I add here n4, right? I add here another vector, right? I call it an epsilon L. N epsilon mu, right? And also I should have a penta parametrization, right? That's all.
But
yes?
Because
you see that is L perb, right? You cannot really cancel any longer a propagator, right? Yeah, so if you only add perps, how to say that? If you have an L, right? Then dimension, you cannot have a, because you always have denominator factors, right? So you cannot continue this further. Because you start with a loop momentum, right? You have, and you cannot have more. So you are asking me what I do with the L mu L squared minus M zero squared. That is your question. That's completely transverse, right? Because there is zero inflow momentum. So it has no meaning to further cancel. Look at this parameterization. I didn't write it here. If I have the thought pole, right, then you get sum over L and I and I mu I equal 1 to 4, right? The whole space is transverse. So it's meaningless to further do the reduction. It's fine. So now I should count the parameters, right? Di. What happens in D dimension? First of all, if I have extra dimensions, I cannot have a linear term in an epsilon L because I can only have a quadratic, obvious reason. So therefore, the question is that in the DI, how many extra terms I have in D dimension? So I get D0, right, plus D1 ln4, plus it can be a rank 4 tensor, right? So I can have I get D1 ln4 epsilon squared. It cannot be ln4 squared because the two together is already 3, gives you a 3, right? So that is 2, right? I'm sorry, that is D0, might change my notation, D1, D2, right? And then you get D3 n epsilon L squared n 4 L plus D4 L n epsilon to D4. That's all. So that's the only difference, either you do in D dimension or in 4 dimension. Right? So if you have cut constructible part, it's said in the literature, you drop this coefficient. If you have a four-dimensional, you have only two coefficients. If you have d-dimensional, you have this five coefficient, right? So now that's very simple. So now it comes to Martin's question. So what I do? So I have a Feynman diagram. I generated the numerator and the denominator with the Feinart Q graph, right? And I know what is this function. If I don't have a Feynman diagram, then what I can see that, of course, comes is the famous suggestion of, right, BDDK from 1994, that we should. Now we have the same decomposition for the amplitude, right? The sum of the Feynman diagram. Also, now we can do it in the integrand level, right? And now we should figure out how to calculate the residuum, right? So you see that if I want to calculate so that is equal, how to say that, sum over D0, I1, I2, I3, I4, I1, I2, I3, I4. That's any scalar integral. I'm improvising, right? It's not good. So let's continue with the integral of this object, right? So if I do the integral over this object, then I should do the integral over these coefficients, right? And many of them are zero, right? Because those depends on the transverse momentum, they should integrate to zero. and only the D0, C0, B0 are not zero, right? So therefore, if I do the, I calculate the integrated object, which is integral d dl over I pi d over 2 times En, right? Then my answer is En is equal d0 tilde I1, I2, I3, I4, sum over all these indices, right? The d-dimensional integral. And I get also a contribution from that term. All of the contribution give you zero. So you see I have five coefficients. You try to do the integral, only two of them contribute. And the second contribution is just d tilde 5, d minus 2, d minus 4 over, I don't know, 2. Find it. Right. 4. I d plus 2. I1, I2, I3, I4. And then I get here also I1, I2, I3, I4, right? Plus C0 I d scalar integral, right? I1, I2, I3, sum over again the possible cuts. There was a minus sign, but it's not really relevant. And then you get a minus C7, where you have again the quadratic. You do the similar thing for the triple cut, and then you get D minus 4 over 2, 2 I, I1, I2, I3, D plus. That is 4, right? See. And that is d plus 2. And finally, I get also, let's just assume that the massless particles have no top poles, so I get just b0 tilde I d I1 I2 minus b, there is a other parametrization. Again, dot which has a squared in the NL mu square, and then I get I I1 I2 d plus 2, right? Times d minus 4 over 2. That's it, right? So therefore, to get the integrated, the one loop amplitude, right? I have the scalar integral, the I, I1, I2, I3, In, right? It's just this integral, d dl, I pi, d over 2, 1 over di1, DIN, right? So we have, I have a box integral, triangle integral, bubble integral, also have in D plus 4 dimension, D plus 2 dimension, D plus 2 dimension, and that gives you the rational part, because multiply with D minus 4, if you evaluate this integral, you get minus 6, and here you get plus 1 half, and here you get some other expression, right? So therefore, you see that you get contribution from boxes, D0, C0, B0, and you get also some rational part coming from this additional L-dependent part. So I get the full, I can fully reconstruct on one hand the integrand, then after I do the integral, if I know these coefficients, right, I know the full amplitude, including the rational part. So that's what I do if somebody calculates the Feynman Q graph. So what I do, now comes unitarity, right? Unitarity says now that, okay, but actually my problem is to get these coefficients, right? Now to get these coefficients, it's very clear that I have an integrand which has many dependence on the loop momentum. So if I calculate the quadruple residuum, I only get the numerator function of the quadruple parametrization, right? So I only get this one. But now if I make a quadruple residuum, if I go on shell, I cut the line, they factorize, right? So that is the essential point. So that is the answer to you, that no, I change this en, right? Everything remains the same because sum of the four Feynman dielectrics. And now I say I want to calculate d0, i1, i2, i3, i4, right? And that will just be in d dimension, right? Four dimension. Then I see I calculate the residuum di1 equal di2 equal di3 equal di4 an. And that must be equal sum over the intermediate spin states times a1, a2, a3, a4, where exactly that Sui was showing before, right? So if I make a quadrupole cut, that line is in on shell, that is line on shell, that is on shell, and I will only calculate the residuum, then there's the internal propagator, so the numerator of this internal propagator gives you a sum over the spin. So therefore, and here I get the LQ, which is the loop momentum fulfilling this condition, equals zero, right? And now the interesting thing, as you know very well from the famous paper of Ruth and her friends, that if you have a quadrupole cut in four dimensions, it's completely freezing the loop momentum. We have only two solutions, and actually we have two parameters, and these two choice of the frozen loop momentum gives you the two parameters. If you now go to the triple cut, then you start to calculate the residuum. But now the point is that from that manipulation, if I know these three amplitudes, right, product of these three amplitudes, I can calculate d tilde i1, i2, i3, i4, l per, right? Now if I know that, then of course I can now calculate something like residuum i1, i2, i3, right? I'm sorry. Di1 equal di2 equal di3 equal 0, en. That gives me sum over i4 to the n, di1, i2, i3, i4 tilde L perp over di4, right? Plus ci1, i2, i3 L perp, right? Now, if I know what is this, I already calculated this, I can calculate this, right? I go on and I calculated all the coefficients. So now it means that with this OPP decomposition, I actually carry out a parametric integration, right? Parametric integration means that I parameterize my integrand in terms of well-known functions. And if I do this decomposition, if I fix the parameters, I know the integral, right? Because for every coefficient of the well-known function, I know what is the integral. And I know these integrals, right? The scalar integrals. And I parameterize my loop integral in terms of scalar integrals. Now I know how to calculate the parameters, so I know the answer. So maybe I just stop you to any question, or maybe it was not clear. It was an answer to you? Yeah. It's totally generic quantum physics. That's a very good question, right? Because here you have ground determinants, right? So you have certain pathological situation. Then you have various ways to handle it, right? So it's not giving it's a technical detail, but you can do it. It's particularly interesting when you have a massless bubble for massive particles. and there are two extra integrals. So but since it's so explicit, whenever you have a little problem, you can completely fix, right? It's never an issue. So you see that, now you see how I do the calculation, right? So I should figure out how many cuts I have. If I have my cuts, I know how many times I should calculate the three amplitude, right? I multiply them together, I read out the coefficient in terms of a product of three amplitudes, and that's it. And the problem is that I should do this subtraction, right? First I move this to the other side, it's a minus to get the C, right? And I always do this subtraction. And it's not very efficient, right? Because I only have, let's say, D0, C0, B0 for the massless four-dimensional case, and I should calculate all the others, right? Because in this way I should completely determine the integrand, reconstruct the integrand in this way. But nobody up to now came up with an algorithm which would cure this problem in a numerical code. Or if you do something instead, it is as complicated. So, but of course, if you make an analytic study, you can project it out, right? Because I know now exactly how my parametrization look like. I know this function very explicitly, so I can a little bit manipulate in the variable such that I project out only that coefficient what I need. Or I do an extra integral and so on and so on. So because my time is running, so maybe I'm just jumping to an example. So this is so-called 4D method to get the triangle. So you don't want to calculate all these coefficients, right? You know, in a cut constructible case, you know immediately, right, that the D0, right, that is equal D tilde 0, D tilde L curve, right? I1, I2, I3, I4, and that is just this one, and I have two parameter, two solutions, so I get completely fixed. If I have a triangle, then I have infinitely many possibilities, so I have a finite number of parameters, it's very easy to calculate them. But I don't want to calculate the additional parameters. I only want to calculate those parameters which are appearing in the integrated version, right? And that is that's what you can do when you do analytic work and you don't use computer. So let's. Maybe I'm over, right?
But when are you going to finish?
Maybe I need maybe 10 minutes.
Are you through the section two? Or?
No, I'm in the last section, right? So if I look at my list, what I put in the blackboard, I am already at the analytic method. And I have two chapters there, one about the Mastroia method to calculate the bubble coefficient, and the Forda method to calculate the triple, the triangle coefficient.
So you'll be done in about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, surely. So let's see. So what is the goal? The goal is to get directly C0, right, which appearing here, in here. That's C0. I don't want to get all the others, right? So well, C, then I should take a specific cut, right, L. And that the transverse, depends only on the transverse, but then I should make a parametrization of the loop momentum, right? Since it's a triangle diagram, I get D0, D1, D2, and that I call L squared minus M0 squared L plus Q1 squared minus M1 squared and L plus Q squared minus M2 squared, right? And I have two inflow momentum, so I get this parametrization that I also should do the condition, right, that D0, D1, D2 is equal to zero, right? It means that in the coefficients, all those terms which are having this denominator factor, the LQ part, right, is all zero. So therefore, on the cut, right, that is just a constant vector plus L perb, right, is a just a constant, times cos theta n 3 mu plus sine theta n 4 mu, right? And now the LC squared equal 0 or M1, okay, just do it for 0, right? I don't want to carry the mess, same if you do massive or massive, it doesn't matter. Then you get V squared plus L perp squared equals 0, right? And I know what is this V, right, with this condition. So that is the on-shell loop momentum on this cut. That is the mass general parametrization, only depends on one parameter, right? So then for the, we don't like at that point cos theta and sine theta, we would like to rationalize it, so instead we'd like to use I theta and I minus I theta. Actually, people like to use it better phi because it's just a circle, right? So I introduce n plus minus light like unit vectors, n 3 plus minus n 4, such that that over 2, and then your n plus n minus is equal 1. Okay, and then I have this parameterization LC is equal V mu plus L perb times T plus N minus plus T minus N plus, where T is just E to the I phi, and T minus is equal to E to the minus I phi, okay? So now I know how is my parametrization goes, right? So I know that C tilde 0, 1, 2, L perp has something like ZC 0 plus sum over K minus 3 plus 3 K not equal 0 TK C 0, 1, 2, K. That's it. We have 7 parameters, right? That was, you can check easily, right? That you have a rank 3 tensor, you put this parametrization into the transverse component for a rank 3 tensor, that is the mass general parametrization. So now, then, Darin says that just take the, go to the very large T plus limit, okay? And then only keep the term, which is order 1. So this operation I call L T plus 0, right? So C 0, 1, 2, L perp clearly equal C 0, 1, 2, 0, right? Because I drop all the negative power, and then I also only keep the, also drop the other power. Let's make this Lorentz series. Now, but of course, when I calculate the triple cut, I have one A2, A3, which depends on T, right? I get two terms, right? I get the C0, 1, 2, L perp plus sum over di 4 L perb L di 1 I 2 0 1 2 I right 0 1 2 I 4 L perb I 4 equal 1 to n 3 to n, right? So the question is that if I do this operation on that term, that you still need vanishing. And actually, it doesn't. So, but I know explicitly, yeah? I know my parametrization, I know my denominator factor, it's a very well-known function, I can analyze, I analyze it, it doesn't vanish. But fortunately, if I do the other way around, so I instead of using T plus, I use T minus, I parameterize differently, and I take the other limit, in other words, I go to t go to infinity, I go to t equals 0. In that limit, I get a similar expression which exactly cancels that. So therefore, if I do that sum over plus minus a1, a2, a3, ti, right, I equal plus minus 1/2, then c0, 1, 2, 0. That is the answer. And that is the four-day method to calculate the triple coefficient directly. It was 10 minutes. How you do that in a computer? Tell me.
No, we do not. We do discrete Fourier transform around t, and so you can just pick up the zero.
But we do it numerically. We use that method numerically.
The question is how you calculate next the bubble, right? That's the problem.
It's the same. Again, it's a discrete Fourier transform.
If you're interested, this method can be used numerically. It's just you can't take that limit.
So either you do an integral, or you take this limit, yeah? Or you, also in the computer, you make some sort of integral, which can be a discrete Fourier transform, it can be a contour integral, but if you project something, you should do something about it, right? But that is practical calculation, very useful, right? Because if you have a helicity method, you have all these MHV, MP2s, and you get an incredibly simple answer. You see explicitly how it depends on these t parameters. It's a derivative of this limit, right? So when Sui did his analytic study many years ago, then he did that. Right? But we don't implement, at least we don't implement in the code, because that you cannot do in the code. It's also pretty interesting, the Mastroianni thing, but I have no time, so you can look at my review, the review paper.
Thanks a lot. Resultant. And if you have a homework assignment, you should read the 150 pages.